And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
Hello, welcome to the latest episode of the Race IndyCar podcast. And who else to bring on the show than the latest winner from Road America, Joseph Newgarden? How are you doing?
I'm great. Always great to talk. You're two of my favorite people, so I'm glad to be here.
He always knows what to say to the media, doesn't he, JR?
I was going to say, just buttering us up so we don't ask him the hard questions.
Just listen. I don't say that to many. I really don't.
Well, there was a bit of controversy after the race because I think initially you said you were going to spend over $100 at McDonald's, and then you were asking about Waffle House and whether that was counted as a takeaway option. So what did you get into at the end?
I did end up buying McDonald's. It was not $100 worth. It was a much smaller order than normal. But we got into this debate on the airplane about what's considered fast food. And I consider Waffle House fast food. Apparently a lot of people don't consider that fast food.
So what was your criteria? Because I said to you on Twitter that my initial reaction was like, oh yeah, Waffle House seems like fast food. But then it kind of doesn't meet a lot of the general criteria for fast food. So where was your head at on that?
Well, it seems like the consensus of the web is that you have to have a drive-through, and if you are sat by a waiter or waitress that and you're served food, that is considered a restaurant and not fast food. I mean, for me, you don't have to have a drive-through to be fast food. I never consider that a necessity.
I'm with you on that.
And, you know, I've struggled a little bit with the service. Like, you are, I guess, served at a Waffle House, but you're technically getting served if you go to a fast food place, too. There's people that are facilitating your order and taking your order. I mean, you're not sitting down. I don't know. It's just a very murky situation to be in. I think it simply comes down to, are you going to an establishment that makes your food very quickly and it is fast, greasy food? If it is, then it's fast food. That's the only criteria I need.
I think that's fair enough. I think that's fair.
Never criticize this podcast for not asking the serious down to business questions that people really want to know the answers to.
All right. Well, I'm just going to jump right in. Since you've been on the podcast last, you become a dad, little Coda man in the house. How is that? I mean, we obviously know that, that affects kind of what's going on in the home life and your prep and Ashley's busy and you guys have a different lifestyle because of that. But I'm curious how that's impacted just your outlook approaching these races. And you know, we hear a lot about becoming a parent, how that sort of immediately creates this just shift in your mindset about things. I'm wondering how that's manifested itself, if at all, for you coming to the racetrack.
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, we just had our first kind of mommy, daddy, I guess, away weekend. We had a lot of help from parents and friends and such to facilitate this. So Ashley was with me on the weekend. Little Coda man was not there. But it's been, you know, it's been fun. It's been a journey. It's definitely been very different. Our life's been, you know, busy, and it's a lot more complex. Like, I just can't believe how much more complex things get when you add a little creature to your home. And so we've been going through all that. But, you know, to answer your question, I haven't thought about this a lot, but it is a great question because I've heard about it so much that, you know, people just assume that when you have kids as a racing driver, that all of a sudden maybe you slow down, you know, you start thinking about things differently, like maybe your risk tolerance is different, you know, your decision making is probably going to alter. And I've not had a lot of time with it yet. You know, I think Coda is so young that maybe that hasn't manifested or like fully latched on into my brain yet, but it has not changed one bit. Like, I didn't notice any difference over the last couple of events. I drive the same, you know, sort of think the same in the car. You know, I think you're already, even up to this point, like I'm already assessing risk in a certain way. And I don't think CODA has really changed that for me. Like I'm never trying to put myself in a precarious situation that I know could go very bad, because A, I don't want it to go bad and injure myself. But like also, you know, self-preservation on the track is like critical to overall success. Like you've got to survive and be there at the finish to like, you know, even be in it. So I've not noticed a shift yet up to this point.
So I wonder, one of the things that I've noticed about, we've known each other for a long time. We've been teammates. We've been friends for you know what, it's been like 10 years or something since you first were knocking on the door coming into the IndyCar yeah. series. You've outside of CODA Man being in the picture, you've had a distinct determination about you this year that I feel like has been palpably, like you've always had that about, you've always taken you've always been really serious kind of looking at the craft and, you know, been a high achieving person. Like I know that about you. I think everybody can see that from the outside, but this year there's been a little bit more, I don't want to say like an edge, but there's definitely been something there that just from the beginning of the season has been maybe a little bit more focused, a little bit more driven. We talked at the earlier in the season, you were talking about kind of the changeover of the staff and some of these things that are different for you, and maybe you having to take on a bit more responsibility of a sort of leadership role, even within the two crew or within the team. I'm curious, just is that something that you feel like you've been experiencing this year too?
I've actually been riding the waves a little bit more this year of like in and out of, you know, this commitment zone, I guess, if you will. I mean, I think you're right. Like I came into this season probably like more committed, more focused, more driven than ever, you know, if that's even a thing. Like I feel like, you know, every year you're kind of trying to bring yourself up to this level right before the season starts of like, okay, this is what I want to do. This is like the level of commitment that I want to put into it. And typically it's like, that's everything. It's like, I'm fully committed, you know? But I felt like that was there very early in the year. And there's been like some deflating moments, you know, St. Pete right off the bat was like a very deflating moment for us. We came in on like such a high from the preseason test and then had this extreme low right off the bat and then had to like charge ourselves back up for the next couple rounds. And then like kind of had another couple deflating moments immediately before the 500. And then the 500 in itself was very deflating. And so, you know, I've just been riding the waves of like trying to stay in that commitment zone. And I felt like Detroit, we got right back on it and didn't really fully fire, you know, all the way to the completion of the event like I thought we were going to. And then just had to really bring it again for Road America. But I've always tried to get us to excel within that circumstance. Like whenever we have something that's, you know, maybe it didn't go perfectly or it didn't go to the level I thought it could be at, it's like you literally just gotta say, all right, clean slate next weekend. It's like it's its own thing. And that's what we did at Road America. And you know, we ended up crushing it, I thought, for the most part. The whole team did. Engineering, pit stops, crew, like everybody just crushed it on the weekend, and like the end result was exactly what I thought it could be. And you've just gotta be able to do that. Like IndyCar it's too difficult these days. Like you're going to have these deflating times regardless, you know, whether it's like slightly deflating or it's like really deflating, they're going to come up. And like, if you cannot just reset in every single moment that happens, it's so difficult to stay in it and stay committed and ultimately win the championship. So I feel like I've been committed this year, but the waves have been stronger than they've been, I would say, in previous seasons.
Yeah, that's a great response. I want to dig in a little bit actually to something that your teammate alluded to, Will Power, after his Detroit win. He was talking about, you know, Will's gone through some different phases of talking about his mental approach from a more general sense, like looking at the way that he's approaching a season or, you know, sort of the idea of racing in the IndyCar series more from like a zoomed out perspective in the past, over the last decade or whatever. He's gone through some kind of different phases, but he touched on some things that were much more specific after he won Detroit, like about his specific mental approach to like being in the zone, in the car, in the race, working, you know, he alluded to the idea that he's been working on that to some degree. And as athletes, as race car drivers, we've all been fortunate to feel that when everything just kind of slows down and you have a little anticipation of things happening right before they happen. This idea of when everything's really clicking, when you're really aligned in the race car itself. I'm curious if that's something that you've spent any time working on, if you've worked with somebody on that, just for our listeners to get a sense of how important that is and how different drivers approach that over their career or sort of in the moment.
Yeah, it's a massive part of what we do is the mental side. And I think it's harder to convey how difficult that is or like how subtle those techniques are. Like, I think most people can't appreciate it because it's hard to detect it or pick up on it. But it's like a huge part of the game. You know, you're talking about a very highly committed sport. Like as an individual driving the car, you have to be at the top of the commitment level. You're like running the car at the absolute edge all the time. And if you're not on the edge, you're like a percent or two away from it. You're just like always up on the threshold. And so you're working within these like small margins of like, you know, mental commitment and like, you know, where you're at, the way you're approaching it. And I think all those little subtleties like make a huge difference. And I think with Will, you can definitely tell that he seems more balanced this year. I've actually started to think of the zone as more just balance. You know, it's not even so much like, oh, I've hit this like mental clarity that I've never seen before. Like for me, it's not necessarily that. It's just like, I'm just in a really balanced place where I'm doing, you know, what I know how to do. And I'm not overextending one way or the other. I'm not like under it. I'm not over it. Like I'm just there in that perfect spot. It's not like, oh, it's a new spot that I've never seen before. It's the zone. I got here finally. You know, it's just like hitting the right balance of everything. And I think Will has definitely been more in that balanced place. Like I've seen him overextend at times before or get flustered and like try and overcommit or overreach. And that's typically when you get yourself in trouble. And I think for myself, like I'm like always watching that. It's almost like a little meter. Like I think about it mentally in my own head. It's like a little meter. It's like, where am I? Like, am I like in the right place? I'm a little too high. I'm a little too low. And like, I've absolutely, just like everybody, there's times where I get pissed off or I get excited about something and I overreach or I like, you know, I feel like I got to push more and then I just overdo it and I'm not in the right spot anymore. And so I'm like always yinging and yanging with that. And I've not worked with a lot of people on that. I've actually just tried to, honestly, I've just tried to listen and observe from a lot of different athletes or individuals. And like, I listen to how they talk about it. And I've just tried to experiment personally on like how that works. Cause you know, you get really in tune with your own body and your own mental side. And I think experimenting with your own self on where you find that right balance is really the most key thing. You just got to be open to wanting to do that and work on it. And I work on it all the time.
I feel like I'm third wheeling just in general when you guys are talking, but definitely when it comes to like the whole driver mindset thing, because I'm sat here like, I've never done this before and this is really interesting and I should remember that.
JR's just going, he's going real deep right now, right off the bat.
I'm just trying to dig. I'm trying to get as deep as I can.
Joseph, I guess I'm quite interested in sort of where you see the second half of the season going, because, you know, in some ways it's been, you know, an absolutely phenomenal first part of the season. You've obviously won the People Ready Force for Good challenge, which means you've done the one thing that the IndyCar is, you know, up there in world motorsport for, is that the variety of tracks that you go on. So you've won on an oval, you've won on a street course, and you've won on a road course as well over, you know, eight races, which is a phenomenal feat. But at the same time, I guess you finished outside of the top 12 a few more times than you probably would have wanted to. And I think it's important to kind of highlight, you know, your like past stats. So 2020, you finished outside of the top 12 once in 14 races, which was, you know, unbelievable, really, to be honest. And then 2021, you finished outside the top 12 twice in 17 races. And then you've done that four times in the first half of this season. So you spoke a little bit in the kind of aftermath of the Road America performance about how good those wins had been, but the fact that you need to try and find a bit more consistency in the second half of the season. So what are you looking at for areas where you think you can improve, and how does that come together in terms of trying to improve that consistency?
Yeah, I've looked at those bad results and I've sort of jokingly thought to myself, like, we've already used up, you know, any like leeway that we've had or that you do have within a season. Like, we've already spent it. And that's a slippery slope. Like, you know, I don't want to put us on too tight of a rope, like as in, you know, we've already used all this extra up and we don't have anything to give now. But it has felt like that in a lot of ways. It's been feast or famine, no doubt. Like, we're either crushing it, winning the race, or we're finishing 16th. And that's a lot of how the season went up to Detroit. I think Detroit was really a turning point where, you know, we could have had a great day, had a shot at winning the race, and didn't work out, and we ended up finishing fourth. And you got to have those days, unfortunately. You know, it's not what you want. I felt like we had the winning car there, but we ended up finishing with a top five. And I think, you know, for us, we've got to have that kind of clean consistency for the last nine races. Typically, that's where we're strong, is we always have consistency, and we've been lacking that this year. I'm not worried about it. I think we can certainly sort that out. I think some of it was circumstantial, you know, and out of our control. And maybe some of it was in our control, and I'll try and clean up those areas. But there's no doubt that if we want to win the championship, you know, we've got three wins on the board, but we're not in a good position championship wise. It's not like we have a 50-point lead and we've got some buffer. You know, we're still sitting whatever we are, 32 points behind. So we've got to be super consistent, probably knock off another win or two. And if we can hit all those points, then I think we should be there no problem at the finish.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
So kind of continuing on that theme, Joseph, there was obviously a lot of talk in the offseason about changes within your team and what was kind of going on there, but the results that you've managed to pull off in the first half of the season, specifically talking about the wins, obviously shows that the upside of the team is there and that you're performing to an extremely high level. So give us a bit of an insight into how you feel where the team is at the moment in its current form, and I guess how happy you are with how the kind of whole team is performing as a group at the moment.
Yeah, I've been really, you know, pleasantly surprised with our performance this year. I guess I had some unknown expectations for how we were going to really track at the beginning of the year. It's just hard to forecast with so many new people. You know, I had a high level of faith that we could do a great job. It's not that I wasn't, you know, feeling confident. It's just, it's impossible to predict how it's all really going to go until you're in the moment and like working together. You know, that real world experience is just, it's irreplaceable. Like you can't really simulate for it. You can't practice it outside of the actual environment. But it's been pleasantly surprising that, you know, I think we've found a good rhythm and cadence together. There are a lot of new people on there, you know, both engineers that I'm working with primarily, Eric Likely and Luke Mason, are totally new to me, totally new to Team Penske. And so just trying to, you know, figure out our world together. I mean, really, that's what it is. We've got a little world going on, and, you know, it's like, we're in a relationship and just trying to understand, you know, what we like from each other, what we don't like, what works, what doesn't. And it's been really positive. And it's the same on the mechanic side. You know, the way those guys interact with Travis, you know, crew chief in the car, and how that filters down to everybody that, you know, works on the car, builds the car, you know, feeds the energy, does the pit stops. I mean, there's a lot that kind of, you know, manifests together with everybody being on the same page. And I've felt really good about it. It's been in a good place. You know, I think we can still get better. I mean, there's things we've learned in this first half of the season that, you know, maybe weren't perfect, but I think the expectations of it being perfect would be unfair. So yeah, we're in a good spot. And then the team as a whole, you know, three cars going down from 4 to 3 has been good for us. I think we've been more nimble. We've been more focused. And, you know, the team overall has been elevated from where it's been over the last couple seasons. It's not just one car that's shining on a weekend. I think we've had a lot more moments where we're stronger as an entire team. And that's really going to serve us well as we get down to this championship chase, because typically when we have that, we have a lot stronger run at the championship.
So I've got maybe a little bit more of a specific question, but kind of along these lines of just the communication that goes on among the team and with your engineering staff and how that ends up working out in terms of how the races play out. This last weekend at Road America, one of the things that I thought was most interesting just about the way that the race ended up playing out. We went through qualifying, and in the fast six, you were out on reds. Rossi ended up on the pole on blacks. That sort of lent itself to thinking that there was a disparity there, that like you were going to be better on the reds in the race, and you know the Andretti cars maybe were going to be stronger on the blacks, and it just didn't end up panning out that way. Like when we got into the race, arguably, you know, your first stint on the blacks, that was a big part of what allowed you to generate a huge gap. Rossi didn't, you know, you guys were on the same fuel save strategy and all the rest of it. Like there wasn't really any other variables involved there. You put a ton of time into everybody in that first stint. I'm actually just curious, looking back at that with the benefit of hindsight, does how the race ended up playing out make you think any differently about what you could have done in qualifying to stick it on? Like, do you think you could have been on the pole on the blacks? Like, how are you guys thinking about that? And I'm honest.
I can answer that. It definitely does.
I'm just curious, because it was such a weird way that it was an unexpected way for the race to play out, I guess, after watching practice and qualifying.
Yeah.
So was it unexpected for you guys, or did you end up just thinking like, oh man, we could have had that extra point for Paul too?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. I mean, just starting with qualifying, I was very surprised. In the moment, I was very surprised by Rossi's lap. I didn't even think he was – I got it wrong. Like, no one had told me that he was on blacks specifically, so I just assumed he was on reds because he had a half-second gap to the next guy in blacks.
Right.
You know, the lap time that Pelot did was within the realm of what I thought a new black tire was going to do on that day. I thought it was a low 5. It's a 5.2. It's a 5.3. And I knew a used red – going off the data that we had the day before, I knew a used red, I could probably knock out an 8 or a 9, maybe a 7 in a perfect world, but you'd have to absolutely nail the lap. And I think I needed one less lap on the tire to get the 7. But 8 or 9 I thought was doable. And I was like, that's probably going to be plenty over the black tires. So I think Rossi was a big outlier in qualifying. And when I thought about it leaving that night, I'm like, I don't know that I could have done that on the black tires. I think he would have just beat me if I went out on blacks as well. But then when we ran the race, I for sure rethought about it. And I was like, you know what? I think my pace was better than I thought it was on primaries. And if I, you know, maybe the track was getting better and qualifying better than I thought it was. And if I was to go do it again, and I gave myself 3 proper laps, and you know, maybe that third lap, I could have just nailed it and beat him. I don't know. It's kind of hard to say at this point, but I definitely rethought about it after the race.
What about the restarts? I guess, you know, while I was watching the race, I was thinking when you put 7 seconds on Rossi in that second stint, that was going to be the kind of race winning moment, if you like, or the race winning period where you'd, you know, extended that gap and really established yourself in the lead. But it obviously turned out that we had the late cautions, so it ended up being that your restarts needed to be, you know, pretty much perfect to seal the win there. And we saw Rossi get passed by Ericsson, which showed just how, you know, I guess just how easy it is to be passed on the restart if you're not kind of on top of things. But it seemed like you'd maybe been watching Rossi, or you'd kind of worked something out, and you felt like you know, you'd kind of found something in the restart. So talk us through how you were thinking about that, because obviously that ended up being, you know, a really key pivotal point of the race.
Yeah, I mean, just fortunately for us, he seemed weak on the restarts in general, which was a huge surprise to me. Typically, one of the Andretti's strengths is their tire warm up. You know, they can fire the tires off pretty quickly, similar to the McLaren cars. They're very fast to energize the tire. We're typically the opposite. You know, we have to work a lot harder to energize our tires, which sometimes gives us the benefit of a more gradual tire degradation, so we can hold on to the tire a little more. But I noticed right from like the beginning of the race, when we had all those restarts in the first stint, Rossi just did not seem, he didn't seem very good at firing off the final corner. And so I thought, you know, with him directly behind me, he's actually the car I want to be restarting behind me, because I think I can do a better job of getting not only the pull through 13, but 14. The other thing that he was weak at was just turn 13. So I thought, you know, the more speed that I can carry through 13, I can kind of expose his weakness within that specific corner, which then starts the first gap, and then you maximize 14 and you can create the second gap. And so it was kind of like a double whammy to me on those final restarts that just pull that gap on him. I think Marcus looked stronger. He would have been harder to pull that gap on, but, you know, for whatever reason, Rossi on that day, he just was not great at getting off on the restarts. And I think it ultimately helped us, seal the deal at the end.
I think that's a great thing for the fans to hear and kind of get some kind of more insight into, because, you know, obviously the fans are just watching you guys from the outside driving the car, but the fact you're able to analyze what's going on behind you while the race is ongoing, while also computing your strategies and working out what you're doing with your tire and just generally just keeping the race together. You know, that's a really, I guess that's the difference between, you know, winning in this series at the moment while it's so competitive, is these kind of crucial small moments where if you can find just the smallest edge, then that is, you know, something that can push you over the edge to take the victory.
Definitely.
I was just going to ask, because you were behind him at the beginning. So at the end of the race, it looked to me like he was having a hard time with the rears in particular. Like on the restart that he ended up getting past, you know, he's just, they're off in your rearview mirror at that point, and you're just stoked probably that you got a big gap. But you could tell that it looked like some of the issue through turn 13 was trying to accelerate over that, you know, crest in the road to the exit, that he was having a hard time getting the power down through that phase. And then off of 14, he ended up getting past because he was laying a patch off of 14, not getting traction. And that was a big part of that final restart that he ended up getting passed on and couldn't get it back. Is that in particular, like the balance of the car, is that something that you could tell from him earlier, or just that he was just not as strong when the tires were colder one way or the other?
Yeah, it was kind of both. So like in that first stint, he just seemed weak in 13. He was actually pretty good in 14.
Yeah.
When his tires were underneath him. But I think your observation is correct. Like he was weak on the rears at the end of the stint. Like he seemed to be high deg for the rear tire. When the restarts came into effect was really perfect as well, because it looked like he worked really hard to chew up his tire a little bit too much to catch me on the final stint. We actually took the opposite approach. I was like, look, I've got a decent gap here. I'm going to try and really bring the tires in neatly. I've got a little bit more overtake than him. I'm just going to bring them up smoothly. And then if he gets to me, I think I've got plenty to just keep him behind. So I'll let him chew his tire up. So yeah, I think at the restart, he had already done a lot of damage to his rears, which is what led into the poor form for him out of 14. But he was just in general not secure in 13. You could tell he was really fighting the balance. Like he looked like he was just too on the nose probably for that particular corner. And that corner, I think, exposes that more than say a carousel. I think the carousel, you have more opportunity to balance that out with your footwork. Whereas with the undulation and, you know, the sort of the rise of the track in 13, if you're just on the nose, it's going to bite you at some point in the corner. And you could just see him really fight that, especially once he got to the middle. And so, yeah, I noticed all of those things from the beginning of the race, and none of them seemed to favor him on the restart. I'm like, he's got old tires. He's not good in 13. He's probably going to struggle off 14. Like if I just get a decent jump and do my deal, like it shouldn't be hard. And that's kind of what played out.
Yeah, good launch. Good launch off the last corner. Be in good shape. That's cool to hear. That's what it looked like kind of from the outside, but that's awesome to hear that you were that aware of what was going on behind you. A final question from my side, actually talking about your bus bro, Scotty McLaughlin. What's impressed you with him this year? And he's obviously gone through a little bit of a slump here. He seems awfully hard on himself. I'm just wondering if you've had any advice or if you've been able to, you know, I know this, it's weird when you've got an intra-team dynamic where you're sort of buddies with somebody, but you're still got to show up and beat them every weekend. So that's a tough dynamic, I think, to operate with. You guys seem to be managing it pretty well. I'm curious if there's any degree of like mentorship in these sort of moments that's happening, or maybe in a more general sense, just what you can tell us about what you think he's going through at the moment.
It's a very difficult relationship for me in that I have a lot of admiration and respect for Scott, and I just really like Scott. Like he's become a friend of mine.
He's a likable guy,
but like, I, you know, if we weren't racing, I'd probably just like being buddies with Scott. So it's tough because I also rate him as one of the best drivers in the world. You know, I have a high level of respect for him and what he's able to do. And I think he is one of the best in the world, and he's taken the IndyCar in an incredible fashion, you know, done a much better job than I think you could expect of anybody with his background. And he's just continuing to get better. And he's already really there in a lot of respects. Like the hard bit to work out would be to drive the car at a high level, like with great speed. And he's already worked that out. There's just like some other, you know, parts of his game that unfortunately you just need time to really progress with, in IndyCar particularly. Like it's such a different craft of racing, and like the style of the championship and how competitive and close it is. Like you kind of go through these a couple times to like learn the real ropes of how you do it. And he just hasn't had that. And I think that's, if there's any deficiencies in his game, that's all it is. It's just the time. Like he doesn't understand how much effort and like how many cycles I've had at seeing this thing. Like and not just like the championship, even Detroit, for instance. Like he was kind of bummed in Detroit the way qualifying went. And I'm like, dude, you know how many cracks at qualifying in Detroit I've had? Like, I know exactly like how this place goes, you know, where it can bite you, where it can go wrong. And it's like super easy for it to go just slightly wrong. And then all of a sudden you're not where you thought you should be. And so I think for him, he just needs more time in the sport. He's already done the hard part. Like he can drive the car just as quick as me or just as quick as Will. And at times he drives them quicker than us, you know, and we're learning from him. So it's like, you know, that's the, if he couldn't get that down, maybe I'd be worried about his long term, but he has the hard part down. He just needs the time now to understand like the real ins and out of the way this, you know, this championship flows. But then sorry to keep going on this, you know, going back to like the difficulty of the relationship for me, it is tough because, you know, I actually find myself wanting to mentor him probably more than I should. And I don't know, he's at this point, he's been super receptive. Like if anything, like he's taken my advice, and all my advice to him has been genuine. Like I really want him to get the most out of his time and his experience, because I'm a big believer. Look, I'm a huge believer. I've always wanted the strongest teammate, and I want my teammate to perform at a high level. The higher level my teammate performs at, the more opportunity it gives for me to perform at the highest level of the field. And I always think I can get more out of him then. And look, we're going to decide that, right? Like the best man's going to win at the end of the day. So I want him to be the strongest he can be. And I've been trying to give him all of my input and feedback that I can. And he's been super receptive to it. But there's times where I'm like questioning myself. Am I trying to give him too much? Like, does he find me annoying? Like, is he like, this guy is, you know, what? I hope he doesn't think I'm speaking down.
Who's this guy think he is?
Like, I'm not.
He's only a two-time champ. And, you know, I'm sure that's not what's going through Scott McLaughlin's mind, dude. He's just like, oh, this is surprising. Thanks.
No, but honestly, it's been great. It's been a great relationship. Like, I've learned stuff from him. He is pushing me at times. And I feel like, you know, I just want to help him in any way. You know, whenever he feels a certain way about something or he's too hard on himself, which he 100% is, he's way too hard on himself. then I just try and, you know, I try and give my feedback and my thought process on it.
Yeah, Joseph, you can tell he's too hard on himself. And sometimes I think the media could be too hard on him based on, you know, I think you were touching on there his kind of lack of experience in IndyCar. And I think that stems from the fact that he's obviously barely driven a single seater until he came into IndyCar, you know, a little bit of Formula Ford back in the day before he was in supercars. But yeah, his adaptation has been, you know, absolutely rapid. And I do sit there and sometimes read things and think, yeah, that's, you know, I don't think that's really fair based on the, you know, the experience he's coming from. But then while you sat there thinking that, you're thinking, I know for a fact that Scotty will be sat there and he'll be twice as hard on himself as that person has been in the media. So I guess he's one of these people that sometimes he just needs to get out of his own way. And maybe you can help with that because if you've gone through similar things in your career in the past as well.
Yeah, 100%. And I think he's a perfectionist and, you know, he's come from an environment where, you know, he was top dog, like clearly. And it was a very different championship than IndyCar in that I think, you know, when you found yourself in an environment with the team he was in, where they found such an edge and they could hang on to it at all times, you know, just never really changed. He was just always the top dog everywhere he went. It was, and he's even said it too. He was like kind of almost easy at times, sometimes to just win races, win poles. Like he would just string them together, no problem. And IndyCar, you could do that in this championship, but you know, to maintain that race after race, you know, even the best of the best just can't do that nowadays. It's too difficult. Like I find that we're on a great performance high and we're doing well, but you know, it's impossible to just win 8 races in a row. It's just not going to happen. Like there's always something that's going to come up to derail you at one point or the other. And so I think he's had to mentally adjust to, you know, I'm going to call it the waves of this series. Like they're going to go up and down a little bit more. And I think he's just had to mentally, you know, acclimate himself a little bit more to that than he realized.
And now two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Just coming back to you and talking about these waves that you're talking about. We've got Mid-Ohio coming up next where you won last year. And then we're going into New Gardens territory at Iowa where your average finish is something ridiculous like 3.2 or something from 2014 onwards. So I guess, do you feel like, you know, the maybe this was bad of me, but when you won at Road America, one of the first things I thought was, and we're going to Mid-Ohio next, and then we're going to Iowa. And, you know, that's a great opportunity for you to kind of look at trying to get those two wins that you said that, you know, you kind of feel like you need now to keep pushing on in the championship here.
Yeah, I try not to dig too much into, you know, the mental security of we should be excellent somewhere. You know, because things change. This is going back to the stuff with Scott. Like things change so quickly. You know, there's tracks where we've showed up before where I expected us to be excellent, and we weren't. We were anything but excellent, and we just had to really work at it and, you know, figure out why things had changed and what do we need to do differently. And then on the flip, I look at tracks that we've been to historically that have been bad for us, and I go, okay, well, how are we going to make this an excellent track? So I kind of try and stay level with that approach. You know, I know that, you know, if the tire hasn't changed vastly and the track's not changed a bunch, then like last year's setup should be pretty in the window. You know, the car's not changed a bunch right year to year, but there's always something that could happen. I don't know. I mean, it's sometimes unforeseeable. I mean, maybe there's just a small change of the track from the winter time and all of a sudden it requires something a little different. So I guess I'm just saying I'm very open-minded to the fact that, you know, we can be strong anywhere. History doesn't always repeat. And, you know, I feel confident in some things that we bring into a weekend, but I also am open to be flexible that, you know, if things are different, we got to pivot and we got to be cool about pivoting and not worrying about it.
I guess there's only one more thing for me, and that's, can you please invite JR onto Bus Bros and make him wear that cow costume so that I can have that in the bag?
I have a little different costume that I would prefer JR to wear.
Okay.
I don't know that we'll do that. I don't know that we'll do that on Bus Bros, but yeah, we'll have to get JR.
Don't say birthday suit.
Nope, not that one.
Please tell me something else.
No, it's something. If you really think about it, you would know what I would want to dress JR as.
Yeah, Yeah, I think I'm on the same wavelength right now.
But we definitely got to get him on. We're trying to work out what we're doing. I mean, we still don't really know what the heck this show is. Okay, so give us some time.
You've like broken all the rules of the media by just like starting a show without really knowing what you're doing, without any sort of plan, and it's just took off anyway. So like everyone in the media is just hating you right now for your success, obviously.
I don't know how we haven't gotten shut down. You know, we did say we did say going into it, if we don't get in trouble, then we're not doing it correctly. Like we're doing the show wrong. So I don't know if that's good or bad, but we are trying to get in trouble at some point.
Just in case anyone who's listening to the podcast now doesn't know what Bus Bros is, go and check it out on YouTube. It's Joseph Newgarden and Scott McLaughlin shooting the breeze and doing random things like dressing up in cow costumes and whatever else it is. What else have you done, Joseph? You've done some crazy stuff so far already.
I mean, look, it's a show about two bros that have some buses. It's about us living at the track. You know, we interview people time to time. We taste test food. It's a little segment called Sweet As with Scotty Mac. And we have fun. We try and find random things to get into each weekend, and we are on YouTube. You can go find us, just search Bus Bros, and I'm sure you'll find a link.
Awesome. Well, Joseph, thanks for your time as always. Great to have you back on the show again for a second time this year, and we wish you the best of luck coming up to some tracks that hopefully you'll have some success at.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
I'm sure you'll agree, Joseph is one of the best talkers in the IndyCar paddock. And although I do feel like a bit of a third wheel listening to him and JR sometimes, it's always a lot of fun to have him on. So thanks to Joseph and of course JR for this week's episode. That's all for this week. But next week, we'll be back with the return of Listener's Questions. Very special episode that we're looking forward to. We did a few of those last year and we're definitely looking forward to doing that again. So if you have any questions for JR and myself on IndyCar, or anything else within reason, please get in touch. The best way to do that is to send us an email to podcasts@therace.com. That's the-race.com. Don't forget that. We love all submissions, but voice notes are especially encouraged as we can now play them on the show. So you could join JR and myself live in a very special episode. Alternatively, you can tweet JR or myself. I'm at Jack Benyon and he's JR Hildebrand. If you enjoy the show as well, please like, follow, or subscribe to show your support in your favourite podcasting app. It does mean a lot to us. And remember to check out the-race.com for IndyCar news and features, as well as loads of other motorsport content, which is great. And speaking of great motorsport content, while we're doing housekeeping, The Race's portfolio of podcasts is now part of The Athletic. So head there to find the latest episode of our F1 MotoGP podcasts, plus Bring Back V10s and more. So thanks for joining us, and we'll be back next week with more IndyCar chat.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.